Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, July the 19th, 2016. I have 7:02 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Reese, and the pledge will be given by Councilmember Bailey. Mrs. Reese.
You guys can sit down, I'll wait for you. Only if you want to give public comment. Heavenly Father, we are so grateful for the opportunity to meet together tonight as residents of Cedar Hills. We're grateful for this beautiful community that we live in and for the friendships that we have established here in this city. We ask thee to bless us as we discuss city business tonight, that we will do so in a calm fashion and with hearts and minds geared towards making decisions that are best for our residents. And these things we pray for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Ben, give me a second. Are you guys here for a scouting event? Do you think that we have a scout that would like to lead us in the pledge? Come on. There we go, and back. Why don't you come up front? Ask the audience to rise, and then we'll follow you in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Excellent job done. Okay. Moving on to our agenda for this evening, we need someone to make a motion to approve the meeting's agenda.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay. I have a motion to accept the agenda as it is. Is there a second?
I'll second.
There's been a second. Any discussion? Let's have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Mr. Zappala is not here and Mr. Geddes is not here, so the remaining council members all voted in the affirmative. Next is public comments. Let me grab the sheet. I do not have anyone that has signed up for public comments. Is anyone that wanted to speak but did not sign up? Mr. Gentry, are you?
I thought I was on the agenda number 11. Is that not true?
We have an agenda item number 11, but okay. You need to tell us what you want to do. So do you want to speak during item number 11?
Oh, yeah, I'd like to speak.
Or do you want to speak now? You have your choice of speaking now or waiting for item number 11.
I think it might make more sense if I wait till item number 11.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else that's come to speak on an agenda item? Mr. Burr, are you wanting to speak in public comments or you just want to answer questions? But are you wanting to give public comments or are you here just to answer questions from the council? Very good. Thank you. Okay. Then I will close public comments at this time and move on to public hearings, of which we have two of them. First is, and I will read it, it's amendments to the City Code, Title 10, Chapter 4, Article B-5, access requirements to include flag lot developments as a permitted use within the R-1 15,000 zone. Has anyone come to speak to this public hearing this evening on that specific item? No? If not, I will close that public hearing. Move on to our next public hearing. Item number 5, amendments to the City Code, Title 10, Chapter 5, related to development and setbacks. Has anyone come to speak in the public hearing for this item? No? We will close that public hearing and move on to our consent agenda. There is just one meeting's minutes that need to be approved. This is the meeting from June the 21st, 2016. It was a City Council meeting. So hopefully you've all had a chance to read that. I will take a motion to accept the consent agenda at this point.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
Thank you. I have a motion to accept it. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous for the council members here. Next item is city reports in business. Starting from my left, Mr. Brunkner, go ahead.
Mayor and Council, the Timpanogos Special Service District canceled their meeting, so we did not have a meeting at the sewer district. Wanted to mention a couple things. The city breakfast will be on August 13th at 8 a.m., so put that on your calendar to come here to the Recreation Center for a great city breakfast. The council cooks up some mean pancakes and bacon. It's really good. We will be having some street projects in the city come up on August 5th. There will be, they will start a project and conclude the following week. They should be done by the 9th and 10th. Hopefully in time to stripe the roads in front of Deerfield Elementary, Cedar Ridge Elementary up Cedar Hills Drive. So I did send out a summary of what those street projects will be to the council in a management report, if you could review that. There's a link to a video there that I would appreciate having you watch. It explains the type of street project that we're looking at. This project actually is a two-phase project. It's similar to a chip seal project. We don't use regular chips like most chip seal projects. We use a product called Utilite, which is a lightweight aggregate. It's a good product. Hopefully it'll suit our needs. There's some advantages to it, like not breaking windshields. It doesn't ravel as much, but it is a two-step process like a chip seal, and I would like you guys to be familiar with that, make sure that we're comfortable doing that. The plants and soils class this month has also been canceled, but we will be back on track next month. And then also there's a Sherry Whitehead is starting a new community group called the Spark Singers, and they will be assisted by Vocal Point, who is a performing group from BYU. So that's coming up, and so we'll announce more details on that later. And that is all I have.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Reese, you're next.
Let's see. For Family Festival Committee, Keith Irwin, who's been one of our co-chairs, has resigned from the Family Festival Committee, so we're currently looking for a few additional members. A co-chair is being discussed with Jerry Ann Conroy, who's one of the co-chairs now, and we also need someone who can handle sponsorship. So we're looking for some additional members there. And then, as David said, the Parks and Trails Committee is hosting the annual summer breakfast on August 13th at 8. And as much as I'd like to take credit for cooking breakfast, it's actually the fire department that does the work. We just serve it. So fire department will be there again to cook breakfast. And if council can plan on being there to serve, that would be great.
Thank you. We are on summer hiatus for Mountain Land Association of Government, so I don't have anything to report on that. In our last meeting with Lone Peak Public Safety, we had some exec session issues which can't talk about, so I'll move on to Mr. Bailey.
The Arts Committee didn't meet this month, so okay. I don't have anything.
Mr. Crawley.
Yeah, North Point Solid Waste Special Service District met, and we've been discussing the potential purchase of Bayview Landfill, which is in South Utah County. Right now, North Point doesn't have a landfill, so we pay groups to cart that off, and I'll talk more about that when we get to discussion item number 19.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move on to our scheduled items. Item number 9, which relates to the public hearing. This is an ordinance amending City Code Title 10, Chapter 4, Article B-5, access requirements to include flag developments. Mr. Goodwin, time is yours.
All right, last summer we moved a series of lots that are located adjacent to Canyon Road, pretty much on the southern half of Canyon Road. We moved them from called the RR1 20,000 zone, or the rural residential half-acre zone, and put them in the residential single-family 15,000 or third-acre zone, because most of those lots, or a lot of them, are about a third of an acre. What that did was created a lot of what were not legal non-conforming lots of record and made them legal conforming lots of record. One of the things that we didn't do at the time but we're proposing to do tonight is that when these homes were in the R120,000 zone, they had the ability to subdivide their land and put it into with a flag lot or a common drive project. What we're proposing is to add that development right back into these land, this land. So nobody that did not prior at some point have the ability to develop a flag lot would get that ability that didn't have it before. And on the second page, you can see kind of the density that this would create. Now, this map that we've created is, I want to say it's kind of accurate, but it's not totally accurate. And let me give you a reason why. Is that we cannot predict how people will potentially develop their lots. So where somebody comes in and wants to do a common drive project, if you look at this and say, okay, well, before they had four lots, now they have five, we don't know where they're going to put a street. We don't know where they're going to put public improvements. They may not be able to fit five lots on. They may only be three. But based on the current square footages, this is what the density would be. But once they start doing the improvements, they're limited in what they can do. But that's the story of this that went through the Planning Commission. They made a positive recommendation. And I'll entertain any questions that you may have.
Council have any questions on this item?
It's pretty straightforward.
If there's not, I will take a motion on this. I do need a motion, though.
I'm sorry. Okay, I move that we approve Ordinance 7-19-2016A, amending the City Code Title 10, Chapter 4B-5, relating to access requirements in the R115,000 zone, subject to the following change. Oh, no following changes.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Was that Mr. Bailey?
Yeah.
Okay. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote on this. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 10, also an action item. This is an ordinance amending City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, related to development of setbacks. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
10-5-29 addresses decks, porches, patios, pergolas, awnings, hot tubs, and similar structures. And if you read the code, similar structures is recreational equipment such as swing sets, slides, and trampolines. Now, the reason we want to take that language out is because there's not really any code in this section that regulates how those are installed in on a property. So there may be a time when the city needs to adopt code specific to how to install a trampoline. Typically, if somebody were to get a trampoline now, they would come get an excavation permit in order to dig. But as far as that's concerned, we look at where they're digging. But the fact that a trampoline goes in there, we don't really care about that. Swing sets, I don't know of anybody that's ever called me to install a swing set. But we do talk about decks, porches, patios, pergolas quite a bit. And this code will be getting reviewed by the zoning department and the building department in the months to come. And we'll be proposing some more changes. But initially, we just wanted to clean it up to take out these items, swing sets, slides, and trampolines. The Planning Commission, we debated whether or not to include hot tubs, but just decided for the time being to leave it in for right now. That may change in the future as well. But yeah, any questions on this item as well?
I like it.
Good.
I shouldn't be regulating swings and trampolines.
Great.
Okay, you want to make a motion?
Does someone else want a turn? I'll do it again.
I'll take a turn.
Go ahead.
I motion that we approve Ordinance Number 7-19-2016-B, amending the City Code Title 10, Chapter 5, Article 29, related to the development and setbacks, subject to the following changes. No changes. Just as is. Thanks.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mrs. Reese seconded it. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Passes. Thank you very much. So we move on to item number 11. Mr. Gentry, if you'd like to come forward and tell us your name and your address. And then you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Steve Gentry. I live at 4213 West Sandalwood Drive. My property lies between Sandalwood Drive, faces Sandalwood Drive, and the south side of the property is on north, or it butts up to North Oak Road. And I have a 10-foot easement that belongs to the city there that is currently full of weeds. I never see the south side of my property, so For 10 years that I've lived there, it's remained basically weed control by the city. Once a year, I usually go down there and spray it early in the spring. But I know that my neighbors, every day, they walk out of their houses and they look across the street and they see this big, ugly wall. It's 100 feet long and 15 feet high. It's cement. And in the interest of trying to be a good neighbor, I'd like to put something there other than weeds. And so what I propose to do is to dig out 12 to 15 inches of soil that I don't care for, a lot of which is road-based that they used when they installed the wall. And I'd like to put topsoil in there at my expense and then put ground cover and perhaps some bushes. And I began this project thinking that it was an easement like the easement on the north side of my property, like the park strip where I could kind of plant trees and whatever. And Mrs. Pay somehow got wind of that and let me know that I couldn't do that. So I stopped, and that's why I'm here tonight, to see if I can proceed with that. The sticking point from her apparently was I wanted to, when I built the wall, I had two sleeves put down the sides of the walls so that I could put irrigation down there from my property, hoping to do that someday. So I have a way to access that and to water it. She said the only thing I could do is hand water it. I have no interest in hand watering it. So if I can't do that, I would just leave it as weeds. But I'm coming before the council tonight to see if I can get some kind of variance or suggestions on how to proceed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Okay. The city owns a lot of land in the city. And what we wanted to do tonight is present to you a couple of situations in your packet. There's some aerials, and I wanted to go through those and kind of show you that these issues are unique. Each one's a little different. There's always something unique about it. So on the first page, you see an aerial of a home, and it's kind of difficult to see, but if you look really closely at the home, you can see that this property owner, if you look at the lines in the ground, you can see this property owner has built about anywhere from 5 to 10 feet beyond his property line, commandeered city property. We're aware of it, and we've notified him of it, but that's an issue. The second page, you can see an aerial of homes that are along Pond 12 of the golf course. You can see that for a few of them, they've put planter boxes out there. And this is, I apologize for the quality of the image, but you can see that they put planter boxes out there on the city property. They put grass out there, and they treat it as their own lawn, up to sometimes even the bank of the pond. And they get upset when the city goes out there and does weed control. So that's another issue of another instance of somebody using city property for personal use. The next one is grass. As you come into on Clubhouse Drive into the Vista Room, there's somebody out there has behind their fence planted grass, and they mow it and maintain it. So that's also on city property. The fourth one there is on Harvey down by Highland Gardens. Nobody here has commandeered any city property, but I received a call from this homeowner saying, we'd like to use this as a garden. But you can see that clearly the city has plans to widen the road there and make that a road. We don't want to see anybody putting a garden there or planter boxes there. And finally, an aerial of Mr. Gentry's property, what he was discussing. You can see the 10-foot strip there of the weeds that is the city's property there. What we're proposing as staff is that, and this isn't by no means is this comprehensive of every instance that the city has where somebody has used city property and maintained it or planted something on it or used it in some way, shape, or form. It actually is very common, and we'd like to set up a process for how to deal with this because it is a, I don't want to say it's a problem, because sometimes they actually do a better job of maintaining it than the city would. They plant grass where we would just maybe knock down weeds. But what we're proposing is that in these instances, it's approved by a conditional use permit by staff after review through the building and zoning department. And this is to review for location, what type of easements, what type of utilities are on the property, what type of maintenance can occur there. In some instances, as in the case of Mr. Gentry, we'd be concerned about irrigation adjacent to a retaining wall. Other things are future use, what plans does the city have for the property itself, and also for certain geographic considerations, such as what's the slope on the property, what are they doing to the slope on the property, is it adjacent to a pond on the water. So these are all things that the city staff would consider as part of any conditional use permit process, and then would go by either approving or denying any requests. But that's kind of the route we want to go. So we're not saying no or yes. We would just say, like to say, let's set up a process whereby we can begin to track these and give permission and have written agreements between the people and the city to maintain these types of properties. Or, as may be the case in some, actually sell them the property. That may be in the interest of the city as well.
Would there be any cost to the resident to obtain this conditional use permit?
There could be. I think there is a $100 fee for conditional use permit, but that can be discussed. At this point where there's nothing, we can set the rules on the processes.
Is there when there's an easement or when there's a thoroughfare or a roadway that goes through someone's property, if it's used for a long period of time, then pretty soon that becomes a public road. Is there any easement issues like that here, whereas if someone used this property for a certain amount of time, would the city have a hard time claiming it back ever?
I don't think the city would. And now let me give you an example. A gentleman named David Blake owns property south of the development that Mike Geddes is doing, and it's right just east of the fire station. And as you drive by Canyon Road, you can see that people for years, decades, have parked their vehicle there and used that to access the foothills. Now, to say that he can't develop his property because for decades that this has been a spot where people can park their vehicle, I think that would deny him his property right.
So there's no risk, right?
Okay. Let me give a couple of thoughts, and then I need to step out for about a half an hour for some more city matters. But what I'm hoping the council can do is recognize that there's probably some instances where we cannot grant access to the residents to do what they want to do, but there's incidences where we can't. I find Mr. Gentry is one of those situations where I think we can. And so
I would agree with that it just need to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. So I'm stepping out. Mr. Crawley's taking over for about a half an hour. Mr. Crawley, you can come down and take the gavel if you'd like, or stay where you are.
Okay, I'll stay here for now.
I would say my recommendation is the same. I like the idea of a conditional use permit, though I would prefer that resident doesn't have to pay for it if they're going to be spending their money to beautify city property. And that the conditional use permit is with the understanding that staff or planning commission, whoever needs to review that, is looking for those exact issues, which is that it's a safe area to be accessed. There aren't any other issues that we need to address if they're going to beautify the area. And with the understanding by the resident that at some point in the future, if we decide to use that property, mm-hmm. they understand that that's at the city's discretion. But I love the fact that there are residents who want to beautify those areas and make them look nicer.
Yeah.
I don't think we should punish them.
I'll pipe in here a little too. I think that any time that we can benefit a resident without it hurting the city in any way, then we ought to do that. And someone mentioned that we should view ourselves as a customer service team, kind of.
Yeah.
That we as city employees or city administrators should try to serve our city residents as best we can. And then I like what Jenny said about make sure that they are under the understanding that this is city property, and the city, if they had a need for the property, could come and take the use back. And I would think that would need to be in writing.
Yeah, so I think what we would recommend is that there's almost a boilerplate agreement that mm-hmm. covers these things.
Yeah.
And in the case where the city would grant the use or grant the maintenance or whatever however you want to say that, we would prefer that it's one of these conditional uses that's approved by staff, because staff, like David, Jeff, and myself have knowledge of the city's public utilities, the building code, and the zoning throughout the city. So we'd probably have to just meet and discuss these on a case-by-case basis. And then that's how we're recommending it be approved.
Right.
So
now this isn't an action item. This is just discussion.
This is only. Just a recommendation. So based on your recommendations, we would go back, draft code, and then take it to the and then bring it
would
here.
Would the conditional use have to go to planning commission, or can it be done by staff?
There's right now there's three approval authorities for conditional uses. If you remember,
yes.
It depends on what type it is. So it could be staff, it could be the planning commission, or it could be the council. So in this case, we would say that let's have this be a staff approval.
Agree.
Where in some cases, like commercial uses in the SC1 zone, that would be that's a council approval. So that's not changing. We would just add this to that list. And
so did you say this will go or won't go to the planning commission?
When the code changes, it will go to the planning commission for the actual code. But right. Then on a case-by-case basis, we're saying we'd like to approve those in-house.
So this one specifically would just be
right. So and at the same time, one of the benefits that has gives to the residents is that if they have to go to the planning commission, they don't have to wait a month. We can just do that in-house in a couple days. So.
And there's still an appeal authority if
yeah.
the staff said no and they wanted to appeal, that would go to, I don't remember.
I'd have to look, but I believe it would be to the council.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's great.
Ben, do you have anything to add, or should we move on?
Nope, okay. I'm good. I would like to make a motion if we're done with this.
Yeah.
The fire chief's here. He's going to be talking on item number 17, but he needs to run over to the structure fire that we had this last week. Mm-hmm. So I would like to make a motion that we move number 17 to our next discussion item so that he can get take care of the business.
I'll second that.
Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So let's move that up. So number 17, review action on a resolution adopting specified restrictions of fireworks and open fires. If you want to come up, Fire Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as you know, fire conditions are getting really bad. We had a fire by the high school in the brush over there, and usually we can pull in with our trucks and put them out pretty quick. And this one, we just couldn't get out very easy. We had all four of our brush trucks over there for quite some time. I walked out in the weeds. Usually they're about up to my hip, and they were over my head, that wheat grass. And so we had such a wet spring, and things are so dry now. This weekend is going to be very hot, unseasonably hot, and some wind. And we have also an arsonist in the county right now that's lit three fires out at Five Mile Pass. And ours was lit on intentionally the other night. So with looking at our resources and covering three cities and so forth, Alpine's tightened their fireworks restrictions. They did it yesterday. Highlands has stayed with theirs because theirs are pretty strict already. I'm just asking maybe you review your fireworks issues right now. So the problem is, like I said, if we get two or three fires going at the same time, we're going to be it's going to be really hard to take care of. The other thing is on the 24th, on that weekend, when you try to call mutual aid, Lehigh has the same problems we do. American Fork, everybody's going to be dealing with their own fires. And so it's hard to get mutual aid on those holiday weekends to help out. So anyway, but it is your decision. I'm just telling you that the conditions are a lot worse than they were on the 4th. So.
All right.
History. Fireworks are allowed the 21st through the 27th. Uh-huh. And then again, not till it snows. So pretty much just this next week. But like the chief says, if one city gets a fire, the other two cities go to that fire, and then if another fire comes in, we're out of resources.
So what exactly are the suggestions that we change here? Are there any specific changes that we're suggesting?
It says in there.
Yeah, it looks like what has been asked for and what's been done in other cities is right now we have no aerials east of Canyon Road.
Right.
But what we'd like to do is close east of Canyon Road to all fireworks. And then open fires, meaning no open fire pits. If you have a screen over it, that's fine.
Okay.
If it's a barbecue, you know, propane or charcoal barbecue, as long as it's covered, then that's fine. Uh-huh. But nothing open, no open flames or anything like that.
So this would be starting now until when?
We usually keep it in force until we say conditions of light, and it's usually in October.
September, October-ish.
Especially for the
now, nobody's supposed to be able to light fireworks after the 27th, so after that it would just be the open fires.
Yeah. So pretty much is restricting people from doing fireworks on the 24th, even non-aerials east of Canyon Road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
we
pretty much the same thing we do every year.
And we've done that in the past for the 24th. Okay.
Every year.
Yeah, the 4th. they usually can get away with it because it's still a little bit green, but by the time the 24th comes around, no. Okay.
So.
Any other discussion people want to have on this?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 7-19-2016. A resolution of the City Council to adopt specific restrictions on fireworks and open fires east in portions of the city. So restrict those like we discussed east of Canyon Road.
Okay. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. I have a motion that's been seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And mine was an aye, too. I think I can vote. Can I vote while I'm doing this?
Yep.
Yes.
I think I can, right? Okay. All right.
Thank you
very much. We will now go to item number 12, review action on an ordinance amending the city code, Title 6, Chapter 8, relating to smoking and electronic cigarettes, park curfew, and noise in city parks.
You can scratch something off your list.
So the county contacted us and wanted us to codify our prohibition on smoking in the parks. It's listed as a park rule down there, but it's not in our code. So what we're proposing to do is to include language. You can see in the proposed code. I'm sorry, it's been a while since this was written. But there's two changes to the code. Would be the definition of park would be to include Bald Diamond soccer field, recreation of area, or public trail, to be a little bit more specific there. And then the definition of smoke or smoking would read means and includes possessing, carrying, or holding a lighted pipe, cigar, or cigarette of any kind, e-cigarette, or any other lighted smoking equipment, or the lighting or emitting or exhaling of smoke or smoking of a pipe, cigar, cigarette of any kind, e-cigarette, or of any other lighted or electronic smoking equipment. And then under 6-8-8, where it used to say alcoholic beverages prohibited, it would just read prohibitions. And it would be smoking is hereby prohibited in cities' parks.
So when it doesn't include the alcohol, does that mean that alcohol is permitted now?
No. A is it shall be unlawful to consume or possess alcoholic beverage within a park. Okay. So it's just a listing prohibitions rather than one specific one.
Gotcha. Which, if I recall, is required by state. State does not allow alcoholic beverages in any public park.
That's just us hearing. And there was also discussion on curfews in the park. And our curfew right now, parks are closed from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., and that's to be synonymous with the entire county. American Fork Police, they obviously are our police department. American Fork's parks are closed from 11 to 5, and so we wanted to be on the same time schedule as them. Now, one issue that came up was the noise in parks, and that's a little bit different. You can be in the park up to 11, but you can't necessarily make all the noise you want in the park up to 11. The noise regulations limit amplified sound from Labor Day till Memorial Day after 8:30. So during the school year, it's up to 8:30. And then from Memorial Day to Labor Day or during the summer, it's up to 9:30 or 10:30 on Friday and Saturday. People can still be in the park after that time, but the amplified sound is no longer allowed. Elsewhere in the city, the noise ordinance prohibits certain activities after 10 p.m. So the park sometimes during the summer runs a half hour later, but elsewhere in the city it could be 10 p.m. And when, just for your information, when a resident reserves the park, they are given a list of the park regulations and rules when they make that reservation. So are there any questions on that?
John, are there any parks that allow smoking within a 15 mile radius of us?
I don't know of any.
Okay.
Generally, public places are smoking is
right.
prohibited.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments on this?
Is our golf course excluded or is it considered a park under a definition?
It is. It's not under the definition. It's not considered a park. So it just says any public or city-owned park, ball diamond, soccer field, recreation area, or public trail.
I just know there is smoking on the
recreation area. That sounds an awful lot like a golf course to me.
I think that, if I remember correctly, the reason why was because you have to pay to use the golf course. That's kind of what differentiated it. Oh, it's a business then instead of a park.
Yeah. We don't just allow people to walk their dog down the fairway.
Right.
So there would be some differences there.
But I could be wrong. That would be a question for David Shaw. That was my understanding.
That makes sense.
All right. Is anyone ready to propose a motion here?
I move that we approve Ordinance 7-19-2016C, amending the City Code Title 6, Chapter 8, relating to smoking in city parks.
I second it.
Okay, we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
I have to do roll call vote.
Oh, this is a roll call. All right. Jenny?
Aye.
Mike?
Aye.
Ben?
Aye.
And I'll say aye. Okay, the item number 13, discussion on installation and operation of solar panels.
All right. In the past year, the city has received 95 applications for solar installations on homes, 87 of which have been approved. And recently, we have received an application for ground-mounted solar panels to be placed in a backyard. And this is what brought this whole discussion matter to this point. So we started looking at what other cities are doing to not necessarily regulate solar, but there can be some detrimental effects on solar panels in the surrounding area. As people try to use efficient energy sources, they sometimes create unintended consequences for those around them, whether that be glare, flickering, could be a number of things. So we did some research on what some other cities are doing, and the code that's in your packet comes from West Jordan. And initially our discussion was simply about solar panels, and we've broadened that to be about renewable energy systems, because as I was reading this code, I thought, okay, well, this is some good insight on other items that may come before the city, such as wind energy systems. And what it does, it regulates, tries to mitigate, I should say, some of these detrimental effects that some of these installations could have by requiring certain setbacks, certain height requirements, and making sure that the neighbors around are not affected in any way. One of the things I thought was interesting was under the wind system, it regulates shadow flicker, which would be if the turbines are spinning and somebody's window, it would cause almost like a strobe light effect in their home. This is a negative effect that something like this could have or could cause. So what we're proposing is to look further into this type of renewable energy system code and taking it to the Planning Commission for their review recommendation and then ultimately bringing it back to the City Council. So we wanted to bring this to you today in order to get your feedback, any direction that you may have, any thoughts. So welcome to any discussion.
Question.
Yeah.
Of the 95 applications, what would deny an applicant? I mean, you got a few that you've denied. I'm just curious.
Sometimes what they propose doesn't meet building code.
But actually, most of those are just in the hopper.
Yeah.
It's not that they're denied. It's that they're being processed.
Yeah.
So ultimately, they may be approved.
So they could be. So you need a certain amount of width for access requirements between the edge of the roof and where the solar panels begin.
Oh, I see.
So it may go back to the engineer to redesign the system.
I have no idea. I've never done them. I'm a builder. I've just never done them. But they're going up like crazy.
They are.
I guess my only feedback is I understand the need for some kind of regulation, especially if it's impacting others. I just don't want to. I want to make sure that we don't make it challenging for residents to be able to install these types of resources.
Yeah, and I don't think that's our goal, is to make it challenging, but just. As an example, if somebody came in and wanted to do ground-mounted solar, we don't really have anything that says what you should do, how close you can be to the neighbors, how high you can be, for that matter. But we do want to protect view sheds. We do want to protect people's property values. And we don't want to see somebody's backyard become a solar field. They still need to maintain a minimum amount of landscaping or open space. So these are the types of things that we want to pursue, just to make sure that, like I said, the detrimental effects aren't passed on to the neighbors in the area.
One other question. So I'm only aware of one windmill that we have, or turbine, whatever you call them, in our city. Is there more than one?
No. We just thought we'd add it in right now.
So the only thing I noticed, because it's on the golf, it's right next to the golf course.
Is it in our city?
No. Oh, wait a minute. That's Highland, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that's in our city.
Oh.
So I don't think we have any. Not that I know of.
But interestingly, it's noisy.
This is another thing that would be in the
code. So I didn't read clear through this sample, but it is noisy. If you stood on the green of, or the tee box number three, it's, if the wind's really howling, it's... So that should be a consideration of noise.
Yeah. Make sure that's in there.
Just flicker effect.
And as in all things, we want to lean towards freedom of the individual and their private property as long as it doesn't affect someone else's private property. So.
Right. I think that we're all on the same page there as far as direction.
Yep.
We're not suggesting to prohibit these types of systems, just to make sure that they're done in a way that makes it compatible with the area.
Right. Any other comments on this section before we move on?
Okay. Are you looking to just refine this then? Is that what you're going to bring it back to us?
Yeah, what we'll probably do is take West Jordan's code. I really liked their code that covers a lot of things that other cities I feel like neglect. We'll revamp it, look through it with our code in mind and what our priorities are, and take that to the Planning Commission.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll move on to number 14, review action on a resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the fees, bonds, and fines schedule of the City of Cedar Hills.
Thank you, Council. In your packet, you have a proposed modification to the fee schedule. This is in regarding to the city becoming a passport acceptance facility. So the city has applied for this passport acceptance facility, and we were accepted. There are not very many passport acceptance facilities out there. Typically, they're in post offices. I think the closest one to us is Lehigh, and they take by appointment only scheduled times to get a passport. In our area, there's a lot of people who travel. There's a lot of young men in the teenage years ready to go to a foreign country, and they need passports a lot of times. So it could be a very big help and aid to some of our residents, and also to the residents of Highland and Alpine. There's nowhere over there to get a passport either. So you can see in the packet here the fees that are associated with getting a passport, and we would like to add those to our fee schedule.
Have we done an analysis to see what costs we will add as well as revenue we'll get? Is it a cash flow positive thing for us?
Yeah, we analyzed that initially. It's been a couple months since we've talked about it, but it was, what we see is that it will be cash flow positive. So we are going to start off providing this service with the manpower that we have within the office. If it ramps up and we get really busy, then there would be a need to add some labor, but it would definitely cover the costs there.
What kind of costs are we talking like? Are there software fees, printers? What kind of costs are we talking about?
The biggest cost is labor. The biggest cost is just having someone sit down with the applicant and go through their packet with them to help them get that processed, and then they have to submit all of that. We turn around and we send that off to the State Department. They cannot take their application with them and do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why they have these passport acceptance facilities. So the biggest issue for us is labor and helping people walk through the process to get their passport done.
These fees are established by state, I mean, are they regulated or?
They are regulated, yeah. They're told what we are told what we can charge, except for I believe photos. That's something that the city can decide on that. Some passport acceptance facilities charge up to $25 to process a photo. We're proposing 10.
And just print them ourselves.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, we would take and process it and then put that in their application right on the spot. Cool. Yeah, they're welcome to go down to some other facility, Walgreens or some other place, or bring a photo if they would like.
So. What is the difference between the application fee and the acceptance fee?
Let me look here.
I can tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
The acceptance fee is what Cedar Hills gets to keep per application for offering the service, because the Department of State needs our help. So we get to collect $25 per application, and so when a person comes in to apply, they're going to pay Cedar Hills $25, and they're going to have a check written out to 110 or 80 or whatever they are that's going to go off to the U.S. Department of State to process the passport. And it's kind of like our benefit for agreeing to be trained and have this facility available for our residents.
So like the first time adult passport books, it says 110 for the application fee. It'll be that plus $25 for the acceptance fee? Okay.
Yes. And a photo fee if they take a photo.
Right.
And an expedite fee if they want to push
10 years, though.
Right. Okay.
Any other questions on this one?
Nope.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion that we approve resolution number 7-19-2016 a resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the official fees, bonds, and fines schedule of the City of Cedar Hills.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, and it's been seconded. And this is a resolution, so it's just all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. I think it's everybody. All right, going on to item number 15.
Hey, Rob?
Yes.
Do you mind if I revisit item number 12 just for a moment?
No, that'd be great.
I wasn't here.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask a question to the council. So when I was reviewing the materials for item 12, where it talks about park curfew and noise in city parks, one of the things I noticed was that the ordinance that was being proposed had language that classified a trail as a park in our definition. And so my concern was that we were changing our ordinance to effectively impose a curfew on our trails in addition to our parks, which struck me as unneeded. I don't know that I would care if somebody was walking past 11 p.m. at night on the trail going through the golf course, for example. And me personally, I would rather not have that as part of the ordinance. I don't know if now that the ordinance has been passed, if we can go back and amend it, if that's allowed.
One concern I would have with that is we do have trails that go through the park. So what if someone says, I'm on the trail, I'm not in your park? And it's past 11, and we don't want them in.
We could say
park.
That the portion of the trail within the park. You know.
Or how about the trails that go behind homes? I mean, I don't know if I don't live next to a trail, but I could see that if kids are down there. I remember being a kid, you know, at midnight and whatnot. You know, there's nothing good going on at trails in the back of homes at.
Well, if they're causing an issue, then we have other ordinances that relate to noise.
We do, but what if you're not there to see them? I mean, it would just be...
I don't know. If they're not bothering anybody, I don't know why we would restrict it. If I want to go for a late-night walk, I don't know why the city would tell me I can't do it.
You can go on the sidewalks.
Why restrict if they're not bugging anyone? Why restrict time on parks?
Well, because the parks generally are right near people's homes, whereas the trails are mostly farther away.
But I think, didn't Chandler say that you can still be in the park up to 11 o'clock? Up to 11, okay. So after that.
Yeah, no noise after 10.
I think other than the golf course, most of our trails do
and
go through neighborhoods.
Through neighborhoods, yeah.
But part of the reason for the ordinance in the park is because you get... people parking in, so then they're doing drugs and other kinds of things like this, and I don't think that's as much of an issue on the trail.
I don't know. I mean, what if we kick them out of the parks and then they, the trail that goes through your neighborhood, all of a sudden they're walking across the street down that trail?
I may have no one on the council to convince me. I just wanted to raise the issue.
Do we ever have issues have put with that people getting in trouble on the trails late at night?
I think that was a good point. I don't think that there's enough support to go back and restate our proposal, but maybe you can bring it up in a future meeting if you'd like to change it. So, if you're okay, I think we'll move on to number 15, review action to amend the Cedar Hills Grove concession agreement. And are you presenting that, David?
Cameron wanted to.
Yeah, Cameron, did you want to talk also during this?
Oh, he was just going to answer questions.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
If there's questions.
Okay.
Currently, the city has a concession agreement with Cameron, who is in our agreement, is doing business as Something Asian, which is a very neat name. In Section 15, concession rights of the agreement, it currently states that the tenant may not serve alcohol on the premises except for catered events with proper licensing. So that's what it says now. And Mr. Burr is proposing that he is able to serve alcohol out of the grill area, so on the premises, and not during a catered event particularly. So the new language would read, tenant may serve alcohol on premises, including catered events, with proper licensing and according to regulations established by the Utah Department of Alcohol Beverage Control, which is the agency which would control how that alcohol would be dispersed, how it's handled, who can do that, and who it can be served to. So that would be the agency that would give the restrictions for that. So that's the proposal. And I don't know, Cameron, if you want to say anything.
Well, and one thing that I've talked to Greg and Wade about this, and alcohol generalizes both liquor and beer. My interest is only in serving beer, so we wouldn't do any mixed beverages, hard liquors, things like that. No draft beers either. It would be confined solely to canned and bottled beers. So we might change that wording or not, depending on
what about presently when there's a wedding or something that serves alcohol and they do get a licensed person to dispense. Is that just limited to beer?
No, but those people have to pay a fee as well as purchase their own.
And that's not what you're asking to do? Or, I mean, is that inclusive in your proposal then?
So let me explain that. So if a third-party group, a private event, comes in and wishes to have alcoholic beverage served at their event, they can hire a bartender, someone who's also licensed through the department, to come in and serve the alcohol at their event. That's a catered event. That's a private event.
That's currently allowed.
And that's currently allowed. And actually, that's one of the reasons, that's one of the catalysts for why we approached Cameron and said, hey, would you get licensed for that? Because if we have someone that it has an event and they are serving alcohol, and we've had an event where somebody brought beer into their event, but they did not have a bartender, they did not have someone licensed to serve it, we have to shut them down and have them not serve alcohol. And if they won't comply, then we have to tell them to leave. So if Cameron was here and he was licensed, then he could provide that service. There would be a fee. We do charge a fee for that to make sure that it is regulated. So, you know, that probably was the initial discussion with Cameron, is to say, hey, would you be able to get licensed so that we can make sure that we're always in compliance with that? And so Cameron looked at that, and you know, there are some regulations that he would have to comply with and some licensing that he would have to go get. And so with that, Cameron's thoughts were, hey, if I'm going to get licensed, I'm going to do all those things and be regulated, then I would like to serve the beer at the grill. So
help me understand exactly where you'd be catering sometimes with alcohol. If it's an event in the center upstairs, you would also sell alcohol upstairs at the grill?
That's correct.
And so anyone can just come up there and just drink beer while they eat a sandwich, whether it's golfers or anybody else, right?
Well, not anyone. They have to be of age. But yes.
Right. And then you would also sell the golfers, I would think. Is that the plan? Okay. And so they'd be able to take it on the golf course. That would be a major change in that, you know, right now people do take beer on the golf course. It's against the rules, but they do it. They're breaking the rules. I don't know if the staff just turns a blind eye to it, or if they, you know, encourage it, or if they discourage it, and it happens anyway. I don't know. I haven't been part of that. But having it be officially okay to now bring it, I know that there are some groups that come specifically. I've seen this on the chat rooms. There are groups that come specifically here because it's a dry course that the rules say you can't drink alcohol. So I know that will hurt our usage there. There's also groups that will be wanting to come more often because they do appreciate the alcohol. So I think that there are some pluses and some negatives from a revenue standpoint. I don't think it's all to do with revenue. I think there's some other issues too that play into it, but I don't want to. I'll come back to that. Does anyone else want to talk for a little bit? I don't want to.
I have a couple of questions for legal, actually.
For who?
For our legal counsel.
Yep. Yes.
So I have two questions. One is that state law says a person may not consume liquor in a public building, park, or stadium except as provided by this title. So are you aware of exceptions in state law that would allow us to serve in this public building?
There are exceptions, but I don't think the exceptions apply, at least not in a bright line fashion. And so the question in my mind becomes, is this a public place when we have leased the facility to a private vendor? I'm not certain of the answer. Typically, when you lease the premises, you lease all of the rights to the premises, except for the right to sell. Does that no longer make it a public place? I don't know. Who has the keys? Who has the keys and the right to open and close and put all the stuff in and out? And in my mind, that there's an argument on both sides there. That yes, it's a public place because the city didn't sell it, but on the other hand, the city doesn't have the right to simply go in and cook up a burger just because we happen to be the owner. In fact, if we were to do so, the tenant would have legal rights against us. So I think there's an argument to be made there, but it's not one of the bright line exceptions. It's more an argument that if you wanted to fall back on it, you could probably do so with a legitimate defense, but it's not listed as one of the exceptions, no.
And does it become an exception once a private vendor actually has granted a license? So in other words, do the licensing regulations in state code basically act as an exception to say, well, you have a legal license to serve in the building, and so therefore you can consume on the premises?
Yeah, so that goes to the right to serve the alcohol at that premise, but it doesn't go to the issue of is there a right to serve it if it's a public place. Mm. And so to get to the public place, you have to go one step further and say, well, not really, because we already leased it away and gave away our rights for a period of time.
Okay. So my second question then is, given the murky nature of that law, we've already as a city decided to allow private parties for the purposes of a catered event to serve alcohol, can we legally discriminate and say, well, they can do it, but he can't?
Well, and so the argument would be the same, in that we have given away our legal right to that premise for a shorter period of time instead of for a year or longer, and now we're giving it away for 4 hours or 8 hours. And so the argument's the same.
Right. So my question is, right, whether Cameron could sue the city if we didn't issue the license, because he's saying you're being discriminatory. You let them serve alcohol, but not me.
Well,
with no
he wouldn't, because he's such a nice guy.
Well, I know that.
but the nice guy defense aside, I think you have a good point.
Okay,
I have a comment on that too, and that is, I think if he wanted to cater, and we said no, he can't get a license to cater, then that would be discriminatory. But if we continue to say we couldn't have alcohol on the golf course, That would not be discriminatory.
Well, one other thing to keep in mind when we talk about discrimination is that discrimination becomes a cause of action only in the event of a protected class. And so there are things in our society where we discriminate all the time. When I get on an airplane, my 6'4" frame gets discriminated against for the 5'10" chairs.
Well, I mean less discrimination and more being arbitrary and capricious.
That's a different issue. And so there may be a right to overturn the council's decision based upon not being treated fairly.
And so, given that it says no one can consume liquor in a public building or park, is any public golf course, are you able to drink on a public golf course legally in this state?
I'm not certain how most golf courses define themselves, whether they define themselves as golf courses or parks. If you define the golf course as a park, then, yeah, you'd have trouble under this regulation.
So can I just ask sort of a logistical question? I know it's regulated by the state, but my issue going back to, we've had a discussion a long time ago about this, was, you know, whether to let our golf clubhouse actually sell it from there. And, you know, my opposition to that at that point was no, because we hire 16-year-olds that can't dispense. Now, I know, Cameron, you hire people in there that are under 21, correct?
That's correct.
And so how do you handle the situation?
You just have to, I will make those adjustments and make sure that there's always somebody there that is certified by the state to sell, so that they're educated on policies and things to look for, and that there's always somebody 21 years or older there, whether it's myself or hire somebody else.
Or he locks it up.
Yeah, or do you, I mean, is it always in a locked, is it required to be in a locked cage?
As far as logisticals, I am planning on buying a cage that you lock under padlock and key, and that'll be stored in the cooler, so it won't even be visible to anybody. And that manager, whoever is able to sell that, will have that key in their possession while they're on their shift.
Any other comments right now? I have a suggestion. There's three reasons I think we should postpone the vote on this. And one of them is, it was noticed as a change of the agreement with Cameron, rather than changing that we're going to serve alcohol on the golf course or allow alcohol to be served on the golf course. That's a big issue compared to just changing a contract. And I don't think it was posted in a way that the residents could have a proper notification that we're going to change a major policy within the city to allow alcohol. That's one. The second one is that there are still some ambiguities that our attorney has said that he doesn't know completely the answers to, and I'd like to get a little bit more clarification on those. And the other reason is, actually I had three now, I've only got it down to two, but I'll leave it at two. Those are the reasons why I think we should postpone that. Now, I think that, in my opinion, we've already agreed to allow people to cater, and I don't see any reason why he couldn't cater just like any other caterer, come in and not change anything and allow that to be changed on his contract to act as a caterer like anyone else. But I do think that we need a little bit more time before we make a change to the golf course, especially since it wasn't noticed that way.
Are we going to allow drinking on the golf course? Because I my understanding is we're still not going to allow drinking on the golf course.
We already do allow drinking on the golf course.
I don't think we allow it. I think it just happens.
That goes back to that, to the point that you were making, is, you know, obviously you go clean out the garbage cans after a weekend and there's beer cans out there. Are we dispensing that? No, we're not. In this case, the reason why it was noticed as a change in the concession agreement is because that's all we would be changing. We wouldn't necessarily be addressing, hey, are we allowing this to be served at the course?
Right.
That's a different policy decision that the council can address.
And if there's an issue and you guys want to enforce no alcohol on the course, we need to talk about that, because right now that's not something that the marshals are going around checking people's golf bags and trying to stop that.
Is it actually prohibited right now?
No. That's a good question.
I think Sam Pryor has said that it's not allowed. It just happens.
So that's they're bringing it. We're not selling it at the golf course, nor would we start selling it at the golf course. So that would be a different policy decision, right, than probably this.
But it would be, if he was selling it to golfers, that's really counterproductive to say, hey, you can't drink it on the golf course, but we're going to let this person sell it to the golfers so they can take it on the golf course. I think this is a bigger issue than just a little minor change to a contract, and I think it needs to be posted as such and talked about a little more. So that's my opinion.
When the agenda goes out to residents, though, all of the supporting documentation behind it's there as well, right? They don't just get the memo; they get everything.
That's right. They would have gotten the proposed change in the agreement. But the thing is, to Councilmember Crawley's point, obviously it is listed as an agenda item to talk about the concession agreement. Now, the information's there saying, "Hey, here's the change that we're proposing." That was available. But if your suggestion is that it wasn't clear enough, then we can.
I don't think anyone.
So,
can I bring
Mr.
to the
Shaw,
council's attention that you earlier passed an ordinance that defines park as any public or city-owned park, ball, diamond, soccer field, recreation area, or public trail, and then passed the ordinance saying that alcohol was not allowed in those places. That we'd be hard pressed to say that a golf course was not a recreation area.
Right.
Yeah, I think we need a little more clarification and changes and how it will affect everything before we move forward. But
I would think so.
Like it was mentioned, I think we already understand that it's already illegal to drink beer on the golf course.
Not according to what you just passed.
But it's happening. I don't think Cameron's going to be actively going and telling people, hey, if you know, drink this here rather than take it out on the golf course. You know, maybe that's like it was noticed. It was noticed to take out, and I can't find it, I'm sorry, but the concession agreement was, instead of prohibiting them, just to take that out. Yeah. And I'm ready to vote on that, but if we're going to start allowing it on the golf course and all that, then I agree with Rob, maybe we need to discuss it. But I'm ready to vote on, if we just, like it was noticed, we just want to take this section out of...
Well, and another question I have is, on the clarification of the building, if you're saying... the leased area is not a public facility because we're leasing it. What if they take it out into the hallway or to the restroom? Then are we in trouble?
Yeah, it's a good question. Technically, would that be a violation? Yeah.
It's not that we're in trouble.
They would be in trouble.
They could technically, if a police officer walks by, they could be cited.
Right.
The person... consuming alcohol.
Yes, not city.
But I mean, are we going to have signs posted saying you cannot leave the grill area with alcohol because then you're in violation? I mean, how would they even know?
You know, actually,
you left the front door.
For the Vista rental, when people rent the Vista and they have an alcohol contract, Greg was telling me that they actually do enforce it. You have to consume that in the Vista room. That's your venue that you rented. You can't take that and go down the halls and in the restrooms and things like that. So it has to be regulated, and maybe that's what Cameron would have to do as well. If they purchase that in his leased space, then they have to consume it there. They can't take it elsewhere.
And I think until we change or find out what happens with whether it is a recreation area or a golf course or whatever, I would be more than happy to assume that responsibility and make sure that they're consuming it within my leased area. Every restaurant does it. Nobody lets alcohol beverages outside of their doors.
True. There's
so
another.
I'm no different.
There's another thing that I'd like to bring up too. There's a very clear argument for freedom for someone to run their business the way they want to run it. And I think sometimes we get confused and want to say that someone also has that same right to run their business and their property the way they want to run it when it's on city-owned property. But that's a different issue. That is a completely different issue because that city-owned property is actually owned by the residents as a group. You know, we're all part owners as residents of this area. And I don't know how the residents feel. I've done surveys where I've gone and asked people, do you think someone should be able to sell alcohol? And very clearly people believe in rights of Americans to do what they want, whether they agree with it or not. That person has right to do it on his own property. But when it comes to city-owned property, when I say now, you as an owner of the city, would you like to have that done in your city, in the city-owned property that you're one of the shareholders with? And they almost 90% or 80% said no. You know, people believe in the rights of Americans to do what they want, but they also believe in their right as an owner of one of the owners of this building, as a shareholder, their right to own to their private property to say, no, I don't want that here. So I think that there's two different issues here, and sometimes we try to mix the two, but I think there are clearly two different issues there. That it is the right of people to be able to say for their city, we want our city to have this kind of standard.
Okay, I'll make a motion. We'll see if it passes or not. I'd like to make a motion to approve an amendment of Section 15 of the concession agreement to allow alcohol sales according to regulations established by the Utah Department of Alcohol Beverages Control. It will be, does it need to have, is it a numbered? Or is that, okay.
No, this is just amendment to the agreement.
Okay.
It's not a resolution.
No, it's just an amendment. Oh,
okay. I'm looking at the wrong thing.
I'll second that.
So can we have discussion now?
Tell me your resolution again.
To approve an amendment of Section 15 of the concession agreement to allow alcohol sales according to regulations established by the Utah Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control.
So is that a motion without any changes to the motion then?
Is it discussion time? Can I?
He's made a proposal.
Yeah, just like it was written right here.
Did you second that then?
No, Mike.
Okay, so we have a proposal and a second, and we'd like to have a little discussion at this point. Go ahead, Jenny.
So my only changes would be that we specify in the concessions agreement what Cameron has said, which is it's limited to can and bottled, so beer specifically, so you list those things specifically. And I think that we also, until we have any kind of clarification on what it means for the rest of the building and the golf course, should state that it has to be contained in the grill area, because it sounds like from what David Shaw's saying, there's the rest of the building, you can't consume or have alcohol in those areas. So I would like the agreement to restrict it to say that, so we're on safe ground there.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Within the lease premises.
Within the lease premises, and that it's restricted to canned and bottled beer.
Yeah.
And I'll resecond that.
Yeah, and I just had one additional comment following Mr. Cully's prior comment, and that is with respect to landlord-tenant law, it is very, very clear that what is not specified in the lease agreement, we cannot interfere, for example, with the quiet enjoyment of the lease premise and the use of those premises in the manner for which they are intended. So if you think about it in the context of an apartment, if I own an apartment building and my tenants aren't doing what I think they should, I can't simply go in unannounced and kick them out. There's a process that I have to follow, otherwise I get in trouble. And so I just want to clarify that under the lease agreement itself, the tenant does have specific rights, and this would be adding to those rights. So.
Okay, and I have further discussion, and that is, personally, and I'll talk for myself here, I don't think that I'd be just fine, you know, if someone wants to serve alcohol and they own the property, but on the city owned property to have, you know, people congregating to drink together, I just don't feel good about that personally. I don't think that's what we ought to do, but that's my opinion. Any other comments at this point before we move on with the vote?
My comment is, you know, business owners have rights too. We allow other, if we want to make this town a dry town, great, let's make it a dry town. Let's take it out of Walmart and out of Hearts. But if we allow it to some businesses, we shouldn't, just because he's still a third-party vendor, he leases it. We've relinquished our rights to the grill as far as Mr. Shaw has said. They're basically his rights now. So he's a third party. We already allow other businesses to do it. I see why we shouldn't allow Mr. Burr to do it.
And the argument against that is what I said before, is it's very different when the city owns the property. I think there's one issue where we allow it to happen on their own property, but where the city owns it, it's a different issue where we're kind of promoting it.
The city does own it, but he leases it, so technically he's paid for the property rights. And once his lease expires, then it reverts back to how it was before.
Well, just like a landlord can say, I don't want pets on my property.
He can.
Yeah, and because he owns property, I think we could say, you know, it's totally within our rights to say we don't want alcohol on our property, especially considering we discourage it everywhere else in the city. So,
which is true, except the Vista Center. Yeah, we don't discourage it there.
Right, that's true.
Yep. So we allow it right next door, right?
Encourage it one place and
right next door.
I kind of agree with that last comment. I mean, we do allow it in the Vista room.
Yeah. Now, if we said there's no alcohol completely in this building, I can buy into that argument too. But we allow it in the Vista room.
Well, here's another thing to consider. I know I'm pushing here, but
no, you're good.
There is a thing that just naturally happens in society, that we slowly allow more and more and more and more and more. And, you know, everyone wonders why things change over time in cultures and in our society. And it's because the next step's always easy. It's always an easy and logical next step. If we allow it here, why not allow it here? The logical next step is going to be, hey, we allow it in the Vista room. Now we allow it with caterers. And now we allow it while people are sitting there having a burger. Why not allow it on the golf course? People are doing it anyway. That's just the natural thing. So we are allowing ourselves to just keep allowing more and more and more. And that happens with society unless there's a clear effort to stop it. And that's my last argument against it. And with that, we'll take any more comments and go to vote.
I have a quick comment in response to that. On behalf of all residents and non-residents of our city who are not members of the LDS faith, I'd like to state that it is not a moral failing to drink responsibly. It is not a sign of our morals sliding downhill to allow this to occur on city property.
Any more comments?
Yeah, I like what Mr. Zappala said. One last thing is, you know, the Constitution was there to protect the minority vote. And I understand, you know, I won't be going to Cameron, you know, I'll be going to get the pastrami burger, but, you know, I'm not going to go buy beer. But I'm not going to be the moral police either. That's.
So is this a roll call vote? Or is this
no, this is a regular vote.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Nay. I can vote, right?
Yep. Yeah.
One against and four in favor.
All right.
Going on to number 16, review action on ordinance amending the city's records access and management program by adoption of an ordinance that establishes the classification, designation, retention, access, denial, appeals process, and records management program specific to the city of Cedar Hills. That's a mouthful.
So if Mr. Shaw could go ahead and talk to the ordinance, that would be appropriate at this point.
Yes, as we've talked about in previous meetings, our recorder and staff have she's worked very hard at putting together a city-specific records retention schedule. This is particularly allowed under Grandma. The city has the right to adopt its own ordinance governing records, and that's what this ordinance purports to be. The city has had a grandma ordinance on the books, but it basically said we defer to the state statute. And so we are repealing Title I, Chapter 8, which is where it says that, and instead replacing it with Title I, Chapter 8A, which is a little bit more specific to not only the retention schedule, but a couple of other items. It lays out that the city recorder is the records officer of the city, and therefore has those duties under the state statute. As far as the records classifications go, we have not attempted to put forward any language relative to protected, private, or controlled records, but defer to the state statute on those points. And then we do lay out the the application process for city records, as well as the appeals track, in the event somebody feels they are aggrieved by the records response. Right now that appeals track goes first to the city manager, and then to a records appeals board, who would be proposed by the mayor and with the advice and consent of the council. Under the state statute, that appeals board must be comprised of a city employee and two citizens, one of whom must have professional training in records management or records involvement of significant volume. And so that would be the criteria that the mayor would need to look for in appointing that records appeals board. And then beyond that, the appeal would go straight to district court. Certainly the city council could decide to do it differently. But as staff, we've proposed this as a way to be more efficient and responsive to the citizenry in the records requests. And so with that, I'll open it up to your questions, comments, etc.
So I asked briefly, but tell me again the benefits to having our own appeals committee and why we would want to bypass the state records committee.
It's simply a quicker process. It's more efficient. There's no magic to it. The statute allows us to appeal to the records committee also, and then to district court. So the magic here was it keeps it local, and it keeps it at least in theory more efficient from a timing and a responsiveness perspective.
But the option is either one,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's either or.
Okay. Thank you. Council, you have any more questions?
I guess I'm still not exactly clear on this because of what you added, Mayor. Are we putting in place an appeals procedure that keeps it local, or is there an option to go to the state?
It's either one. It's one or the other.
We have to decide. Are
we get to decide.
Yeah. What we've proposed is staff.
So state law lets us bypass the state records commission.
Correct. And so what we've proposed to staff is to establish our own local records appeals board, following which it goes to district court. If we go the other path, we go to the records committee first, and then to district court.
And so how would people get appointed at this local appeals board?
It would be appointed by the mayor with the advice and consent of the council.
Like other committees. I guess my concern there is that if someone has a grievance with the city and our records policy, that we gain a bit more of authority when a state appeals records committee, which has a lot of expertise in this, rules in our favor, than if a board made up of people appointed by the mayor makes that same ruling.
And that's merely a policy decision for you.
That's a political decision as opposed to
a legal
decision.
There's not a legal issue there.
It goes the other way, too, in that they may feel like they're not really going, for those people that are feeling like they're not treated right by the city, then they might feel like it's a stacked deck against them. You know what I mean? It seems like both parties could suffer from this.
One of the benefits of a local records appeals board, again, is the makeup of the board. To reiterate, one has to be an employee of the city who presumably would be well-versed in records issues. Secondly, it would be a citizen. And third, a citizen who has extensive experience professionally with managing records. Now, that doesn't have to be governmental records. It could be institutional records, but they would have experience in that realm.
So one of the things that the State Record Committee has, I mean, they're set up to have, somebody from a legal background and somebody from a governmental records background and also a citizen's advocate. That person on that board is just there to fight for the person who's asking for the records. And so I agree with what Daniel's saying and what Rob's saying, which I feel like gives a little bit more credibility. I just worry that, number one, how will we make sure that people on our committee, especially if it's anything like the Board of Adjustment, where they may not meet that often, how do we make sure that they're up to date on grandma laws, which seem to change frequently? And how do we make sure that we don't have residents feel that they're not getting a fair appeal body?
It's an excellent point, but it cuts both ways, whether you're at the Records Committee or here. At the Records Committee, you simply get people who are unknown as opposed to people who are known by the citizens, perhaps. So
it seems as if there's some pros and cons to this. And so, I think you guys are probably ready to make a decision on the retention schedule and such, but maybe not. Maybe you need to discuss and think about more about whether you create an appeals board locally or whether you stick with the State Records Committee.
Do we know how many other cities have established a local appeals board in Utah?
Ask it down there.
I don't know. No.
I don't see a rush to do anything tonight unless you feel like doing this. Just the part of, as I mentioned, of establishing a retention schedule, I can see doing that. But if you have to do the part of establishing an appeal board locally, maybe take some more time and think about the options. But don't just take more time and not discuss it together. I mean, I think this is one of those things that maybe we should be deliberate in our actions and not be hasty at all in terms of establishing this.
So let me ask staff and David in particular and Colleen. Colleen, I assume you worked on that a little bit too. Obviously,
she did
a yeoman's job of consolidating. Remember, the first one, we took the states, and there's done a great job, by the way. Just wanted to say that. But how do you see it happening for an appeal? I mean, if we leave it the way it is, if someone, like we've had in the past, what would happen? What would be the procedure now? Before we went to the state ombudsman, I wasn't here, but you guys all did.
It's not a requirement to go to the state ombudsman. We have done that in the past to try to get to a consensus, and we've tried to work in the past with various groups to get them the records when we've had a disagreement. That's not a requirement. But
what would you do now?
So, what this proposal is that if they appeal to the chief administrative officer, the city manager, and they are denied, then they would appeal to either the State Records Committee or this board, this local board, the three-member board. And we can leave it in where if the council feels more comfortable sending this on to the State Records Committee, we can definitely leave that in and address it later if you guys want to talk about that.
Can we have it go to the city manager first and then the State Records Committee?
It always does.
That's what it is now. Okay.
So right now, if someone requests a record and it's denied by Colleen as the recorder for some reason, then they can appeal to the city manager. If I were to deny that based on legal review and based on the decision from Colleen, we would assess that. If that is denied at that level, then they have an option. They could either go to the State Records Board, or if the council were to put it in this ordinance, they would go to a local appeals body made up of those three people.
Have you ever overturned one of Colleen's decisions?
I don't think so.
I don't know that we've really ever overturned one.
The one reason that kind of spurred this is we got an appeal to go to the State Records Committee and got prepared, spent a lot of money, paid for the attorney, paid for our time, and then all of a sudden the person on the appeal said, never mind.
Yeah.
So we're out of all that money because we have to prepare and get on the State Records Committee. And there's nothing right now that puts anything on anybody else, so we have to take the brunt of that cost.
Would that change if it was a local appeals board?
It wouldn't take as long to get on the schedule because the State Records Committee meets once a month. And it just depends.
Would we be out significant money, though, if they said they were going to appeal and they canceled at the last minute? Would we still have the same problem?
Depends on the grant request and depends on how many lawyers are involved.
I've attended some of these State Records Committee meetings, and they talk a lot about past cases that they've decided and the legal definitions of things, and so they have so much background and knowledge on what's already been decided in the past on those issues, and I feel like we kind of lose that. I think it would be easier if we had our own appeals committee. I just worry that it won't be viewed as unbiased, and then they just won't have the same amount of knowledge that the State Records Committee has.
Yeah. And then there would also be the worry that if they appeal that decision and go to district court, that they might win because maybe we lack the expertise of the State Records Committee.
Who would you recommend be on that committee?
Well, that's something that probably we're not prepared to talk about today.
Right, but shouldn't we have some feedback on that? I mean, if we do one, we got to think of, like, is it an elected official and an appointed official and a, you know, I don't know.
Well, the definition
I think he already gave the definition.
Is there would be an employee, and it would need to be an employee that's not associated with either the request to Colleen, so it couldn't be Colleen and it couldn't be me, because we would be involved in that process. So it has to be another employee. It could be a deputy recorder or someone else, but an employee. Then it would need to be two citizens. One of those citizens would need to have some expertise in records management. It could be someone who has a legal background. It could be an attorney, within the city. It could be someone who is a recorder of another city, or somebody who has access or
would it be a paid
experience?
Position? If we had to convene an appeals board, that we could pay them and get.
So you could.
I'm not gonna pay someone to get it better.
I think the system in place works really good, and I think that this just adds more complication to our city, and I don't see any reason why it really benefits us. So I'd propose that we don't pass this.
Well, the other option, if you felt more comfortable that way, would be to give the appellant the option to go either way. Either to the local board or to the records committee, but that complicates it.
You could approve it with the change that the appeal following the chief administrative officer does go to the state records committee. Yeah. I mean, that you can just, we can follow the same process that we are now, where it would, the second appeal would go to the state records committee and then after that to district court, which is what we do now.
Need to give that more thought?
I think you do.
Yeah. So I propose we let it rest this time and bring it up in 2 weeks.
What's that?
I propose that we postpone this decision until next meeting.
Okay. I have a motion to table this motion and bring it up at a further meeting. Is there a second for that?
I'd like to amend the motion if possible.
Yeah.
I would. Let me go into the. I would like us to, if possible, approve. Have we already approved the
retention schedule?
We haven't approved it officially.
Okay, so I would like that we approve the retention schedule and just place on the next agenda the discussion on whether or not we have our own appeals board.
I like that.
Jenny said the next meeting. Let's. I don't want to say the next meeting. I want to say when appropriate. And that may be the next meeting. It may be a month from now.
Until staff feels good. We feel comfortable about it, right?
But when someone says the next meeting, then yes, I have to bring it.
So does someone want to propose that suggestion?
All I'm saying is that let's bring it up when it's ready to be brought up and not necessarily at the next meeting if it's not ready.
And so am I to make a suggested clarification on your amendment?
Sure.
That's all I'm asking.
And that is to approve all the portions of the ordinance except for the appeals process.
Okay. So, Rob, my amendment to your motion would be to approve all portions of the retention schedule and the ordinance except for the appeals process.
I like that.
You accept that, Rob?
Yep.
Okay, so I have a motion. It's been seconded.
Wait a minute. His motion was to table the whole.
Table it. Well, yeah. Okay.
Why don't she amended his motion.
He amended mine.
He accepted the amendment.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
So we're square. He made the motion. She amended it. He accepted it. We're good. So now, is there any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote then. Let's start from my left. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes. Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
The motion was unanimous. Thank you very much,
Council.
Can
we just clarify, that, did you say ordinance number 7-19-2016?
D, I think
we're wrong. Is that, was that your motion, the number for the ordinance?
No.
Did you say to approve ordinance?
You know, I didn't say that, no, so I better say it.
Can we just go back just to make sure that we have it as an ordinance number? Is that okay?
Yeah. And what's the ordinance? 7?
It needs to be approved by ordinance number.
Yeah, the ordinance number is 719-2016-D.
Okay. I was unclear on that.
Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're clear. It was approved. We're good. So now let's move on to next item, which is open fires and fireworks. So Mr. Bunker.
We did that one already.
You already did that? You skipped ahead?
Yep.
Okay. You guys do for short-term rentals? Okay. All right, then. Let's have a discussion on short-term rentals. I would just suggest the Utah League of Cities and Towns is doing some really good work on this. And I think it is Jody, or maybe it's Meg. I think it's Jody Hoffman that is really on top of this. This is an issue that's affecting all cities, because you don't know it, but if you go to VRBO or if you go to Airbnb, you're going to find that there are rentals in your city that you're not aware of. And I'm not sure that the point is taxes that are not being collected. I'm not as concerned about that as there has to be some regulation in terms of this. I mean, there's a group it's up by Bear Lake, Garden City, that has really done some good work on this. So I would suggest maybe that what we do is, if you guys are willing to have staff do some research, let's have staff talk to the league, have them talk to Garden City, and come back with some recommendations. Unless you know a lot more about this, because I've been in discussions quite a bit recently about this, and it seems as if there is some good work that's being done. And
can we just ask Chandler what he's done to date?
Yes, we can. I'm just saying that Chandler may want to do. Go ahead, Chandler.
Yeah, this is either way. This is coming back. It's just a discussion item. So real quick, we do have two short-term rentals in the city. We don't get a lot of complaints on them, but when we do get complaints on these types of things, it's no different than any other rental property, which typically the problems involve parking, upkeep of the property, things of that nature. So we went out and looked at what some other cities are doing. We had Colleen Sidwell, she's our business licensing official, send out an email to the listserv, the ULBA, listserv, to see what other cities are doing as far as regulating these business licenses. And there is a spectrum of how these are being regulated, from the outright prohibition of anything under 30 days, that's how we define short-term rentals, to prohibitions outlawing short-term rentals unless it's owner-occupied. Look at the Airbnb website, you can rent a couch, you can rent a room, or you can rent a whole home. So some cities are allowing this. So some cities are saying, look, if the owner's in the home, we don't have a problem with it. This isn't as big of an issue in Cedar Hills as it is in some other destination type cities such as St. George, Salt Lake, places where people may be flying in for an evening and not wanting to pay a hotel. Cedar Hills, because we only have two, we're not a major player in the game. You really have to drive to Cedar Hills. So sometimes it's just people staying with friends.
The two that we have, are they licensed, or how do you know about them?
I know one of them is licensed.
Through us, because we don't have any policies. It's say licensed.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's licensed through business licensing.
Yeah.
They have a business license, but not in terms of a short-term rental. Now, the question is, does the city collect? Because when you go to stay at a hotel, you pay a room tax for the evening, and the city collects on that, or the county collects on that. Whether they're paying that
don't know. I can't speak to that. So those are the questions we're looking into. I don't know. We'd like to get some direction from the council as we move towards some more research to see what your feelings are, so that we, when we come back to the council with the recommendation, it follows some of those guidelines that you've set forth. So do you have any feedback, any thoughts?
I mean, let's do it legally. Cities and towns are doing it.
So what I've found is that the cities that are doing this are creating a checklist of what these rentals need to have, and they need to be inspected by somebody from the cities to make sure that they've got fire extinguishers, to make sure that everything's working correctly. There was one up in Garden City that burned to the ground, and that's what got them, you know, going on this, is that if you're renting out a home or a room, then we need to make sure it's a safe place for people to be renting. So okay, that's the whole point.
We currently, just FYI, we do have a checklist that we would run through. So if somebody was renting an apartment, so the one license I do know that we have is for an owner where the owner is not occupied in the building, and they do have a checklist and inspection. It's not interior, it's mostly exterior, so they would have to be more interior. The checklist would have to include some things going into the home, not just the appearance on the outside.
I guess my only feedback would be that we regulate it similar to other rentals. I mean, I just, if you're a property owner, I don't care if you're there, if you want to rent out your house, if you're there or not. Personally, I think we should lean towards the side of letting property owners do what they want with their property within our restrictions. And so we already have regulations about parking and noise, yeah, and I would just like to stay aligned with that.
That's a good point. And let me follow up with that, is that currently our business licensing is conditional use permit that's approved by the city staff, like we spoke about before. I would propose that if this is something that the city council is interested in allowing, that we do present a checklist that there are certain items that are required of them, and that something like parking is that you can't have more cars than tenants at the property for that short term, like all parking must be contained on the property. Things of that nature that reduce the negative impact on the, because that's really where the city, as a city, that's where we would hear about.
Which we already have rules for.
Which we already have rules for, so it'd just be a matter of...
We do have rules, but I'm finding that short-term rental rules are slightly different than non-owner-occupied rules. And that's where I'm thinking that you just need to figure out exactly how cities that are really doing this.
Okay.
And then come back. So.
Yeah, so I kind of lean similarly here in the sense that I would like to let people do what they want to do with their property. I don't really have a big issue with somebody having a rental of this nature. But I agree with the mayor that we need to make sure that if there are any additional regulations that need to be put in place for the safety of the building, that we ought to make sure that we look carefully at that issue and codify what we need to codify.
Okay. Any other questions? Someone wants to make a motion to give staff some direction? It's, you don't have to make a motion other than they need some direction. And so I think, do you have enough chamber? Thank you. Did you guys handle Bayview? Okay, this is our last item then. So, Mr. Bunker, discussion on Bayview landfill.
I have some thoughts on this, but Councilmember Crawley is our representative on the North Point Solid Waste Special Service District, so maybe you could lead off with, and then I'll add some comments if you...
Right. So what the proposal is that a bunch of cities get together and buy some property for a landfill in South Utah County, and there's still a lot of it that's only been discussed in closed session, so I have to be a little bit careful, but... So if the theory is that if several districts, several areas all join together, that range from here clear to North Utah, Logan area, all join together and buy a landfill, it will provide the land necessary for us to have waste go into for many years to come. And it would most likely save money. It's not guaranteed because there's some unknowns, like suppose the EPA made their restrictions more harsh, and that there had to be a lot of money spent to reclaim the land. I don't know. There's some unknowns. There's some risks. But generally, if a lot of cities joined together on this, it would save the money. To me, it comes down to a philosophical issue, and I'd like to hear everyone's opinion on this. Should cities or government agencies get involved in areas where there's plenty of free market groups already in business? There's a resident of our city that works for one of the landfill companies that's a private entity that will suffer greatly based on this deal. And so there's... This will hurt private enterprise that's been trying to get the business of the cities. You know, if they all join together and get the property, then of course the cities as a group could save money. But it also hurts private industry, which has been in this area for quite a while now and owns landfills, owns transfer stations. So it comes down to a philosophy thing to me. I mean, if you look at it, if a bunch of cities join together for a lot of different services, maybe they can negotiate better rates or get better, you know, save money. Even if they bought paperclips all together as a group, you know, you could save money, but you might put out the local stores, you know, at least take some revenue away from them for anything you do. So it comes down to, do we want the government to own more land, have more responsibility, and possibly save money, or do we want to give to private enterprise where we can? Another issue is this is more of a utility type thing. You know, it's garbage, it's waste. So there, you know, government does get involved in utilities because it's hard to, you know, the competition is hard to get out there. But this area does seem to have a lot of competition already. So that's what it comes down to me is should we make sure that the private industry doesn't thrive and we all join together and keep it a government industry, the landfill and waste industry, or do we join with the cities that want to put this together and make sure it's a government-run program over the years? So that's what it comes down to me. And I'm more of a free market kind of guy. Like, I think that government should protect the rights of people in anywhere where non-government entities can make a profit. I'd say more power to them, that they should run and make a profit. And you know, the collusion of different government agencies to try to take over an industry can be viewed as a bad thing. So that's kind of where I'm at. What do you guys think?
So I think historically government does a lousy job of being efficient as opposed to the private sector. So I agree with you what you're saying there. But I don't know anything about the North Point and where they, you know, how that works. It's sort of a quasi-utility. Mm-hmm. It's waste and... So where do you
go from here, Rob? I mean, because if I agree with you, mm-hmm. and I tend to, then the logical next step would be to wage a campaign in order to shut down North Point and have the private sector take over. Am I wrong?
The whole North Point, the transfer station itself, that is North Point right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that I've even thought about. I haven't really got to the point that I want to wage that campaign because I don't know if that'd be the best. But that is something you can.
Next logical step, because mm-hmm. if you say that you don't like something, then you have to say, okay, if I don't like this, what's the next thing? Mm-hmm. And so, if we don't like it, mm-hmm. then the next logical step would be to encourage
a sell of it.
North Point. To shut down, but that's something that all the cities would have to agree to.
Well, I think there's a lot of private entities that would love to buy North Point. You know, it's an industry that's kind of thriving on the private sector. Yeah. And if they said they were selling, there'd be a lot of offers that came in. So
I'm not sure that North Point is operating poorly, but from what I understand, the landfill in the South County is losing about $750,000 a year.
Right, but it's because of volume. They're not getting enough volume. So basically all the cities joining together would make it so it had the volume that it would be a more viable entity.
Do we know that for sure?
If all the cities joined together that are contemplating it, yeah, probably would.
I think Mr. Bunker should weigh in because he was telling me that some of the cities wouldn't be able to give any volume for years. So mm-hmm. why don't you go ahead and weigh in?
Before you weigh in, because we just have one vote on the board,
mm-hmm. right?
could we be voted, could we be brought in? You know, if say you vote no and we say no, are we still pulled in because we're members of North Point?
Yes.
Yeah. And I want to talk to that point because that's a very key point. But let me back up just a little bit. There's two issues here. One is transferring trash. One is landfilling trash. Right now, we are part of North Point Solid Waste Transfer. In other words, we bring trash to their facility, dump it on the ground. They pick it back up, put it in a truck, and transfer it somewhere else, okay? So we're in the transfer business right now. We are not in the landfill business.
They actually do dump it on the ground. They don't just take the pod off the truck and put it on another truck?
Mm-hmm. No. So what happens, the garbage truck comes to your house.
Go pick up your two green passes.
That's what a transfer station does.
Yeah, it actually comes and grabs your can, puts it into a truck, and goes and gets your neighbor's can, puts it into a truck. So it goes down to the transfer station and pushes all the trash out on the ground, right on a concrete pad. Then they take that trash and put into a larger truck, a semi-truck, and they ship that out to Tooele, right? Because we have a private company who is landfilling the trash right now and hauling it privately, okay? The private company got the permit for the landfill. They're responsible for all the EPA requirements. They're responsible for the liner, anything that happens. If they have a fire at their landfill, which according to some estimates is a 60% chance that you get a fire in a year at a landfill just because of what's in the landfill, those things are the responsibility of the private entity at that point. What the proposal is to say, not only are we going to transfer and have this North Point transfer station, now we're going to buy a piece of property as a group, and we would only be buying, North Point would only be a minor
either
owner.
A fourth or a fifth or a third, depending on how many other groups
join
in. North Point itself would be
and
that.
And then
yeah.
This New Era group would basically own the asset, and we would have the right to send our trash, landfill our trash there, okay? But we would be part owners. They would pick two people from the North Point board to sit on a new board above that board, okay? And I think the proposal was Del Goodman from American Fork and Tim Irwin from Highland. Those guys would sit on that board and say, okay, the price per ton should be X dollars to make our finances work. So now we're adding another layer on top of North Point, okay? Because there are two different things. One's transfer. Issue is we would be our group would have 2 out of 12 members on that board. The other 10 members would come from maybe Weber or Logan, Cache Valley, or Salt Lake, or somewhere in the south, right? Because these board members would be made up from different groups. We would lose some control there. But that would be part of it, because we would not be purchasing the entire landfill all by ourselves. We would be a portion of it. And there is room. One of the issues that I see is that we would be financially obligated no matter what. If the landfill isn't generating enough revenue, which right now it's not, it is losing money. Special Fork and is it Mapleton? Who take their trash there? They're subsidizing right now that landfill, so they have operational losses, and then they have to subsidize it as cities. What the proposal is hey, let's get more people to join and defray those losses. So if we could get more tonnage, maybe it makes more sense that we would operate this landfill. There's a performa that I've seen some of it, but it definitely requires substantial tonnage in order to make this work. Private industry can do the same thing. Private industry will compete against us. So one of the components of this whole agreement would be we would be required to send our trash there, our municipal solid waste. But there would be other people who would say, we'll build our own transfer station. One of the private entities has already said, we'll build one in Pleasant Grove. And we will take anybody that we collect trash for, this private company, they say, hey, we'll take their garbage and take to our own transfer station and still take it out to Tooele. So you're not going to get the tonnage that you think you're going to get down at this new facility. Now, that could hurt. We have a 2-year contract at North Point. with a private company to continue to take our stream. So for at least 2 years, we won't be able to take a single pound of trash down to the new facility for at least 2 years because we're in a contract right
now. Is Tooele a private?
Yep. Yeah, it is. There's another private landfill called IRL that we talked about a couple years ago. We talked about direct hauling out to IRL.
Waste management.
There's also waste management. They have a private landfill. So we would be in direct competition with private companies, which can be tough.
So David, what happens if North Point goes along with this and we don't like it? Can we pull out of North Point?
So that would be probably a question. That would be a question probably for our legal side. But we signed an agreement right now saying that we will send our waste stream to the transfer station. Now, if they make us buy into the landfill, that may be a modification of our agreement, and we could say, we're out.
Do we have an alternative of a different way to haul our trash?
Well, the alternative will be this private company will build a transfer station.
Do we know if there's a buy-in?
There's not a buy-in as far as
monetary buy-in.
No, North Point would take resources, financial resources, and I don't know all the details because I haven't been involved.
So is there a special assessment on us then, or something?
No, because the North Point has excess cash, and they would use that cash to purchase a portion of Bayview landfill.
Okay. Yeah. Unless enough cities or enough districts backed out, then it could make it more than we have. I don't know. We have a lot of cash in there, so it might be okay either way.
My concern is jumping into the landfill business when we may not be experts at landfill. And there's private companies that do it. I'm with Rob on this one. I think if there's a private company that can do it, maybe that's good for private enterprise to compete against each other. Our first ton of trash that we sent to North Point was $23 a ton for that to be transferred. I think right now it's $21.80. And so, I mean, 15 years later, the price has gone down. Wow. That's private industry
for
you
because
they're competing against each other.
But there's an issue with North Point. We leave a bunch of cash on the table, but we don't get that cash anyway.
Right. So we're not entitled.
North Point once before.
We did.
There was cash.
If North Point sold and they distributed to all the members, then we might stand to lose some cash, because there's probably some good value in that area, at least in the land and in the transfer station and everything like that. So I haven't launched a campaign to get out of North Point to say that North Point is a sell at this point.
I wouldn't expected you to. That was mainly a point of trying to get a discussion started in terms of what do we do next. If we agree that we're in favor of the private sector being more involved here rather than the public sector, then the next logical step would be to see what other cities think. And if other cities agree with that, then that gets the ball rolling.
Right. And you gotta make decisions based on principles, and that's a principle that I firmly believe in, that where the private industry can and will do something, then they ought to do it. And cities ought to get out of the way.
There's a board that I sit on right now with Timpanogos Special Service District. It's made up of 13 different entities. When that board votes to raise rates, to lower rates, to do certain improvements, to buy equipment, to operate their facility, however they want to operate it, it goes to a vote of that board. And we get drug along. There are times where I don't agree with the rest of the board, and I vote a different way. But member of that entity, and so we have to go along with that. But it's a treatment plant. There's not another option, right? I'm concerned that if we go with this agreement called with Vera, that our interests may not be considered as strongly as if it were more of a local control, and that's something to consider as well.
So I suggest that Mr. Crawley, you just keep us in the loop.
Okay.
Great.
I mean, I would just say this does not sound like a good idea.
Well, the other side to every argument. It's not a slam dunk against it. On principle, to me, it is. But I know that I've disagreed with a lot of people in the city on that same principle.
Even irregardless of principle, just the practicalities of it.
In practicality, it makes a lot more sense because if all these groups did agree to it and were committed to putting their garbage there, then the volume would make it so that
the volume would make it so that there could be some potential savings. So in practice, it's more logical than in principle to me.
No, but in practice, this thing could lose money and we could be on the hook for subsidies.
True.
The current landfill is being subsidized.
It could save money, too. It could save a lot of money if everyone joins on board. But I think it's a matter of principle that I believe the fair market system is better in the long run.
Sounds risky to me.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
I don't like it.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That's our meeting. I'll take a motion to adjourn. I have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Motion to seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you.
It wasn't unanimous. He said nay.
Did you say?